Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The economy is the other part of what's happening with COVID-19 as people are sheltering in place or we're having lockdowns and bars are being closed, jobs are being shed. We just had over 300 layoffs at UTSA here in San Antonio, and it's probably not going to be the last. What's going to happen with our economy? How are the dominoes lined up and which way are they going to fall? You can call in with your questions and comments as we talk about what does it look like? What's the outlook for the economy? 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. We're joined by Pia Orenius, the Vice President and Senior Economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And Pia, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We got unemployment numbers today, and President Trump was spiking the football over them. Are these good news?
Yes, the report today was good news. It was strong job growth and a healthy decline in the unemployment rate at the national level.
And these numbers, though, they're from when?
Well, that's the thing. So these data are a little bit lagged. So this is capturing the growth from May to June, basically. And so it's a little bit backward looking. And what we're seeing, we're having to rely on more high frequency indicators because of the COVID pandemic and the rise in cases, not just in Texas, but in many states in the United States. We've been having to follow these weekly data to the extent that it exists in order to track sort of what's been more of a deterioration since the beginning of June.
So the numbers indicate it looked like we were able to pull out of the gravitational pull of the black hole known as COVID-19, and apparently things are not going as smoothly as we thought.
Right. If you look at the monthly data, it looks like that nice V that we all wanted to see. We wanted to see a steep decline, but a steep recovery from that decline. And so that was, you know, the best case scenario. But now, because of the resurgence of COVID cases, this more recent data that's not reflected in today's employment report, the more recent data suggests that there will be a slowing of the pace going forward. And so that's a little bit concerning to us. And looking at Texas, of course, where the resurgence of cases is far worse than really in the national average, we expect some significant slowing, in fact, because, again, the things like the social distancing index, which we call the mobility and engagement index here at the Dallas Fed, but it shows mobility and engagement of people has gone down in Texas. And so that just means people are leaving their homes less, which means they're probably engaging in less economic activity, which is usually a bad sign for employment.
Now, are there sectors that are being particularly hard hit?
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at the sort of this monthly data, we see the ones that were the worst hit are the ones that are now growing the fastest in the data. So if it's hospitality and leisure, which is going to be restaurants and hotels and, you know, arts and recreation, those sectors were the hardest hit initially, and those are the sectors that are coming back the most strongly in the employment data that we got today. However, because we're kind of turning down again in the more recent data, we think we are, those again are going to be the sectors that are going to be hit first. Like, for example, with the governor's orders just the other day to close bars again and to go back to 50% capacity in restaurants for dining in. Those are, you know, that's sort of this wave hitting us again, and so that's going to have repercussions for that sector. So definitely hospitality and leisure is taking it on the chin in this pandemic. But actually, I mean, as economists, we thought most of the impact would be concentrated there, but we've been impressed with how broad this impact has been really on other sectors as well. So even sectors like healthcare, for example, has seen significant job losses since the pandemic started, which was kind of counterintuitive. And, of course, in Texas, we're struggling with the energy sector, which has been very hard hit as well. So we're seeing significant job losses in the energy sector in addition to other sectors.
Chesapeake Energy declaring bankruptcy. They were a pioneer in fracking and had a big presence in the Eagle Ford Shale and also in the Permian Basin. And they're saying there's a lot more bankruptcies to come. Are we watching bankruptcies? What can we tell from what has been filed so far?
We do watch bankruptcies, and I will say I was, when this whole fracking boom started, that my first visit to a rig, like a real operating oil and gas rig, was a Chesapeake rig that was a drilling site in the Eagle Ford. So I have like fond memories of seeing that and kind of being there when it first started, so it's kind of sad to see what's happened. But we do watch bankruptcies, but that is kind of a lagging indicator. So in order to gauge activity in the energy sector, we like to watch things like the rig count, for example, so how many new wells are being drilled, and so there's far, far fewer. Obviously, the rig count has fallen tremendously since this began. And we also look at well completions, because sometimes they'll drill a well, but they won't complete it, and they'll wait for the price to go up, and then they'll complete the well. So we look at well completions. Now, well completions have turned up a little bit in the last few weeks with the stability in the oil price. So the oil price has come back some. It's been closer to $40 in the last few weeks, and so that's been a positive. So maybe activity in the energy sector is bottoming out now, but we still think that there will be more layoffs in the second half, and that's related to more bankruptcies, which you were mentioning, come certainly, after the fact. That's kind of a lagging indicator.
But the bankruptcies show that the lack of flexibility or elasticity in being able to respond to a recovery. Once the bankruptcy is filed and then the resources are auctioned off, and that's less likely for those jobs to immediately come back quickly if we do see a response in the oil price. But even right now, with $40 oil, that doesn't seem like it's enough to prevent a wave of shale bankruptcies.
I think you're right. I think it's not enough to prevent. Especially for the smaller companies and companies that have a lot of debt going into this pandemic. So those are the ones that are the most vulnerable. Large debt payments, they're unable to roll over that debt. They're unable to get financing from financial markets at the moment. So financial markets have been hard on the energy sector, not just this year, even before the pandemic. There was a lot of restructuring in the energy sector the last year or so. And so these have been lean times, and now this was certainly a huge shock for them, coming on the heels of what already was, some turbulent years.
Yeah, and the writing down of what people estimate reserves are, like if you have a certain amount of oil reserves underground, they haven't been tapped, but you can borrow against that. And those numbers are being written down quite a bit by the billions and billions of dollars. Does that mean that the energy sector we're looking at a long-term slog of recovery?
It's hard to know, but we do talk to contacts in the energy industry, and though they're feeling a little bit more optimistic now than they were a couple months ago, but they're still saying it'll be probably 2 years before they're, back to sort of at least being marginally healthy. And in the meantime, we're going to see more business failures and so forth, and more belt tightening and more job losses likely.
Right. So we have a consumer-driven economy. And many of the consumers are concerned. There's not a lot of consumer confidence right now. What do the numbers tell us about that?
Well, it's been really interesting. With the consumers have been, they've been actually pretty strong in their spending, especially if you look to low to mid-wage workers in terms of their, we have this credit card data, which is some of the more high-frequency data that we've been watching. And so it's come back pretty good. From the beginning of the pandemic. And it's come back more for low and mid-wage households than it has for high-income households, interestingly enough.
Well, let me put a pause on that, because my question is, if people are using their credit cards, that might mean because they're living off their credit cards.
Well, so what we think is what's buoying the consumers so far have been the stimulus payments from the federal government and the pandemic unemployment insurance. So there was a recent paper that was put out by National Bureau of Economic Research, and they showed that two-thirds of the people that are on unemployment insurance currently are making more on unemployment insurance than they were working before the pandemic. So this has actually been fortunate in the sense that it's buoyed spending, especially by these low to mid-income households. The problem is going to be these pandemic unemployment insurance benefits go away at the end of July. And so our real concern is what's going to happen in August, because a lot of these households have been sustained by stimulus payments, which came in the middle of April, and unemployment insurance benefits, which are historically generous.
Right. So we're talking about that additional $600 that many people in unemployment are able to receive during the pandemic. And if that goes away at the end of July, many people say they will not be able to pay rent.
Oh, I think that's probably correct. I mean, it's $600 a week, so it's not a month. That's $600 a week on top of your state benefits, so it's a significant amount of money. And so it's really been a game changer, I think, for people who are lucky enough to get it. And they broadened the eligibility spectrum for those. So even self-employed workers were able to get it, gig workers. People who otherwise are not eligible for unemployment insurance were able to tap into these pandemic benefits, which really has been really important. And so, like I said, we're really concerned about what comes after they run out.
Yeah, I think everyone shares that concern. We're taking a break here. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're trying to get a sense of what's happening with the COVID economy. What do you want to know about the state of the Texas economy amid COVID-19? How have you been personally affected by the pandemic's economic fallout? Are you limiting your spending? Are you locked down at home and you're not going to spend anything, and you're worried about how things are going to reveal themselves in the near future? We'd like to hear your story and what your concerns are and what you're doing about it. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Women in Texas are more diverse than ever, but women of color are increasingly economically insecure.
I mean, I wish I could say things were like getting just stunningly better for women in our state, but there are still lots of work to be done.
The reality of women in the Texas economy, next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the COVID economy. Are we headed towards a lost decade? Will the 2020s be a lost economic decade because of the slow recovery? Finally, it's a decade from now, we'll be back where we were in 2018, 2019. What can we do now? What kind of economic policies can be adopted today in order to speed a recovery, get people back to work, and get the economic engine of America back in full gear? You can call in. What are you seeing in your own life? Has your small business Are you thinking about declaring bankruptcy? Are you an employee? How are you going to make it if those COVID benefits are pulled out from under you? Are you going to be able to pay rent? What's that look like? What's your fallback plan? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you losing sleep over what is happening here? Even if you feel secure, you can probably see what's going on around you. And it's unnerving. How can we get through this? And it takes good economic policies and understanding how to make things work. And we're joined by Pia Orenius, the Vice President and Senior Economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, to help us find out more. So, Pia, the Federal Reserve typically uses things like interest rates to help get the economy going again. What But interest rates, it seems like they're pretty low right now, aren't they?
Yes, they're about as low as they can go. At least in this country, we don't work with negative interest rates, so they're about as close to zero as we can get them as the Federal Reserve. So that's providing the most stimulus that we can using interest rates.
And so negative interest rates, that would mean like if you borrowed money from the Fed, that you wouldn't get that the Fed would pay you money to borrow money. How does that work?
Yeah, it's some countries have adopted negative interest rates, which basically to force banks to lend more money. But it hasn't been that successful. I mean, there's
like in Japan.
Yeah, like in Japan, for example. I mean, their economy is still very slow growing, so they, it hasn't really been able to jumpstart growth there, or even in Europe. And so I think there's some skepticism about adopting negative interest rates in the United States. So I think we're at as low as we can go on the federal funds rate.
And sure. The concern in Japan, when they had their lost decade of the 1990s, is that they had these zombie companies that were able to continue to exist simply by borrowing money. And they weren't really competitive, and they were sort of taking up space in the economy and kind of supplying jobs, but they really weren't innovating and they weren't really producing a lot. And the concern is that we could end up there in the U.S. with a lot of zombie companies.
Yes, that's what you don't want. And so you want the market to function. You still want the market to sort of clear out those companies that shouldn't be around anymore and allocate the credit and the capital to the companies that are growing and have more potential. So that's a very important function of the market. You don't want to shut that down.
The stock market, though, seems to be doing pretty good. We hear President Trump pointing towards that when it has up days. So why is it the stock market can look so robust and healthy when we're seeing signs all around us to show us that the things may not be that great?
Well, that's a hard question. I'm not sure. It may be above my pay grade.
Okay. Well, give us a 25-cent answer.
Yeah, right, the cheap answer. Well, I think that, the stock market reflects, well, first of all, it also reflects not only what happens in the United States, but also what's happening internationally. And certainly places like Europe and Asia, they're doing a better job confronting this virus than we are. So maybe they'll recover before we do. And so, 40% of the earnings of corporations on the S&P 500 are from overseas. So there's some of that mixed in, domestic plus international factors. But then also, a lot of times, if corporations can cut employment, they can, lower their costs and be more profitable, push their stock price up. But in the meantime, we're dealing with unemployment here on Main Street. So there is a disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street, no doubt.
So we hear all the time on Marketplace that the stock market is not the economy. What is the economy then? I mean, should I just look at my paycheck? Is that the economy?
Well, I mean, we like to look at employment in general, labor markets, and to sort of get a sense of what's actually happening, in the economy, rather than like corporate profits or stock markets and those types of things. Now, employment and unemployment, wages is very important. Wage growth, are we seeing wage growth? Are we seeing, employment growth? And those are the things that are the most important in terms of gauging what's really happening out there.
But right now, are we officially in a recession, correct?
Oh, yes.
And so how?
It's a little bit tricky. We were in a recession in April. And so now that we're growing again, we may have, some economists might say the recession is over. Of course, it remains to be seen. If this truly was a V, it might have been like a 1 or 2 month recession and just March and April, and we could be back out. But it could also be a W, and it could, the definition of recession is a little bit vague, just vague enough for economists to sort of make it murky so they can kind of talk around it.
So the label recession is not very helpful in trying to diagnose where are we. So to me, I look at things like, people have bills, people have debt, whether it's to pay your rent or your mortgage or your credit cards or your car payment, your truck payment. And we count on, you know, we're working to pay off these bills that we're, you know, we're obliged to pay off. But if you lose your job, then you can't do that. And people eventually, if we have this unemployment and it continues to be what it's like, or it gets even worse with the COVID lockdown, and we're seeing that the COVID is not getting any better, it's getting much worse. Wondering about, you know, all of the chain reaction of not being able to pay my rent. And so then, and then not just me, but lots of people, and the people who hold the note on that commercial property, that apartment complex, you know, that could default, or that could go in arrears, or also my credit card payment could also be go into default, or my car payment. And these are all things that seem to be within the realm of possibility, aren't they?
They are, but we haven't seen it yet. So that's what's good so far. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. We talked about the unemployment insurance. We talked about the pandemic benefits, the $600 per week. We talked about the stimulus payments that came out, you know, up to $1,200 per adult, $500 per kid. And so that's been really helpful. And then at the same time, we saw, of course, you know, consumption has gone down a little bit because people weren't able to leave their houses to spend money, or stores were closed. But basically, so what we've seen is that what they didn't spend, they actually used to pay off credit cards, or they saved more. So we haven't seen really adverse movement in sort of the indicators of debt and foreclosures and forbearance and defaults and that type of thing. So banks are still, they're still doing okay, and they're still telling us things are they're hanging in there, and their customers are hanging in there.
So I have an anonymous email. What are the pros and cons of taking out a personal loan to cover expenses right now?
Well, if you have to borrow, now is a good time because interest rates are low.
But if you have a job to pay the money back, but what if you could do it now, but you don't know if you have a job 3 months from now or 2 months from
now? That's right. Well, that's right. That's the problem with debt. Yeah.
And so people are wondering, you know, how walking away from these debts is that could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, what we're really concerned about is when these benefits run out, there's going to be no more stimulus payments, and the pandemic unemployment insurance goes away. If the economy is not back by then, or if we go into some kind of a W-shaped recession where, because of COVID and the pandemic and spreading infection, that everything, economic activity goes back down and people and joblessness goes back up, then if you were, you know, caught holding a loan or a lot of debt, then that's going to really hurt your chances of surviving the next downturn. So what we really have to do, the way to get out of this mess is to, we're inexorably tied to the progress of the fight against the COVID-19. So the economy will go, it looks like, the direction of the infection rate. So please, everyone, wear your mask, be careful, and let's turn the tide on COVID, and we will turn the tide on the economy. I mean, we have to remember, Texas is one of the best state economies in this nation. We typically grow faster than the rest of the country. We do really well. We have a very robust economic environment for business and for consumers and for workers. And so we just need to get back there, because what this pandemic is getting in the way.
But we still have like American Airlines. It doesn't look very healthy right now. It's a big Texas job generator. The hospitality industry, the energy industry is not looking good. People are wondering if Texas is going to be able to respond that quickly when we dig ourselves out of COVID.
Well, yeah, there's going to be some sectors that are going to respond later and some sooner. So when we talk to firms, or we tally them in the surveys, we have these monthly surveys, and we talk to over 600 businesses through our surveys, and then we also, you know, talk in person to others. And what, you know, it's feast or famine, it seems. You know, some industries are extremely hurt, and some businesses are already out of business. So those are small businesses and restaurants and hotels and anyone who works with large events, those types of things. But then there's businesses that are doing extremely well. I mean, have you talked to a real estate agent lately? I mean, strangely enough, the housing market is booming and people are buying more cars. And so
yeah, that to me makes me nervous. Doesn't reassure me. Makes me think people are not being irrational exuberance. Pia Orenius, thank you so much, Vice President and Senior Economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. It's great talking with you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.